Bart Hagston, Director, Jackson County Health Department, on the line this morning. Bart, it's good to talk to you again, man. You all right?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good, good. I'm well, fortunately. Hey, I want to ask your opinion on this. You know, when you see the numbers from Jackson County, which we'll talk more about those in a couple of moments, and those of other counties and across the state of Illinois, how do you compare Illinois and in particular Southern Illinois to what you're seeing in other states right now, especially in respect to these surging numbers? Your interpretation, your opinion?
Well, certainly our numbers in Jackson County, and I think throughout Southern Illinois, have been trending lower, which is great. And Illinois in general has been trending downward, and I think, you know, we've got a lot of recognition across the national media for those numbers going down. Certainly compared to some of the other states, Arizona, Texas, Florida, some others that have their numbers greatly increasing, we are doing much better, and I think that shows the effect of the stay-at-home order and the social distancing and all the things, all the efforts that took place over the last few months, I think have paid off.
Yesterday in Jackson County, the newest numbers, 324 confirmed cases in Jackson County, 19 related deaths. Two individuals were released from isolation in accordance with CDC guidelines, bringing the total release to 291 individuals. 14 active cases are being managed. And here's the thing. I look at that, and under the circumstances, can we say that's a success? And I hesitate to use the word in this context because of one singular fact, 19 deaths.
Yeah, you know, last week we had five cases all week, but we had six deaths in Jackson County, and so those are numbers that hit us hard. You know, almost everybody that has passed away with COVID-related illness in Jackson County has had, you know, significant underlying medical conditions, but you know what? About 25% of our population has such conditions. So you can't just say this is a nursing home problem or this is an elderly person's problem, that a lot of us out there have such conditions that put us at greater risk.
And it's interesting you say that. Speaking with other healthcare professionals, they're figuring out doing some math while we're on the phone. They're going, you know, our numbers are a little higher when it comes to some of these numbers and deaths, and I'm not very good with that. But then you realize, and you look at the health assessment reports that are put out by SIH, that we have pre-existing conditions at a higher statistical level than many other places in the state of Illinois, whether it's survival or the propensity towards smoking cigarettes, whatever the case that causes a risk. We have higher numbers in that respect already.
Yeah, that's true. You know, they put out county health rankings each year across the country, and the counties here in Southern Illinois, we rank toward the bottom of all the 102 counties in Illinois as far as those health rankings, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, a lot has to do with poor access to health care at times, but some of it also ties back to our own personal choices like smoking and obesity and things like that.
Right. So what do you think is the most profound change that people will see with Phase 4 tomorrow?
Well, I think people are going to be pleased that they can get out and dine in at restaurants with certain restrictions, and that there will be a lot of other places that will be opening up, health and fitness facilities, day camps, and lots of other types of industries that have some ability to open now. So I think that's going to please people a lot, but I would also encourage them to wear masks and to practice social distancing while they're doing all those things.
Now that we have the guidelines for schools coming down the pipe, what will the responsibilities of the Department of Public Health be in relationship to schools in the fall?
Well, we have certainly been in frequent communication with schools in Jackson County since this began in March, and they were constantly having conversations with administrators as they develop their plans for the fall. And they really want our input. They want to keep their staff and their students safe, and that's what we want too. So we're going to work hand-in-hand with them as much as possible to ensure that happens.
You know, when it comes to kids and face masks, that's a tough call, isn't it? I mean, how to be able to do that successfully, especially the younger and younger they are. What have you learned in the process about masks and kids?
You're right on, that it's going to be a very tough challenge. Keeping masks on kids, making sure kids have masks. I know the state is working on getting a mask to every kid. But, you know, kids lose things all yeah. the time, and they drop them on the ground yeah. and all sorts of things. And so that is going to be a big challenge for schools.
It's amazing you said that. A superintendent says, you know, kids lose stuff. He says, you wouldn't believe how many backpacks we can't find and the laptops inside of them. And then on the list goes, he says, just one of the things we deal with. But here's the thing. You are in a unique situation. You not only have the K through 12 kids, but you have a university in your county. And a university where people, and I've talked to my friends at the university saying, you know, this is one of the things, we have people come from all over the world. So what does the Department of Public Health and what's your level of interaction with SIU to be able to prepare for that contingency?
Well, we've been having conversations with officials at SIU for a while now about their plans. We've been talking with them about how to come back safely, what level of testing might be appropriate. We're getting a grant from the state of Illinois to conduct contact tracing. I think we may have talked about that before. But also part of that grant, we're using some of that money to help expand local testing capacity. And so that includes us giving some money to a couple partners in the county, including SIU and SIH.
You know, one of the things about this and trying to think about this big picture, and you've been around the block, so I know you're going to understand what I'm saying here, is this role that SIU has in Jackson County with economics. We need to see the best possible showing on that front to reassure parents and students as they come back, as we struggle with the issue of enrollment inside this a pandemic. I mean, we've got two things that we're looking at. We're trying to increase enrollment while we've got this pandemic out here, right? People scared senseless in many cases. And so this role is really crucial on more than one level.
It is. You can't put too fine of a point on the importance of SIU in the Jackson County community. And we really need to all work together to figure out solutions to this issue so that they can move forward with school, that we can have students that can be here and attend school safely.
Most of the reports I saw for a period of time, I think about a week ago, saying that half of all deaths in nursing homes. Is that something that you find accurate in your experience?
Yes, I think across Illinois, it's about, I guess across the country, about 55% of deaths have come from nursing homes. I think that's a little higher even in Illinois. In Jackson County, I think it's right around 80% of our deaths have been associated with nursing homes.
So what can be done with this to be able to ensure this? Because what's interesting, Bart, is when we're talking about nursing homes, we think of those patients instantly, but the staff has to be considered as well.
Yeah, certainly, some of the cases involving nursing homes are not just the residents. They do involve the staff there. We've been working in Jackson County hand-in-hand with not just nursing homes, but all sorts of congregate living facilities, homeless shelters, other assisted living facilities, and we're having almost daily conversations with a lot of these places, just checking in on them. What do you need? Here's the latest guidance. And so just trying to make sure that they are prepared and that they can implement procedures to have the best possible outcomes for their population.
All right. You've been in this up to your elbows since day one. So what have you learned over the last, we'll call it 3 months? What have you learned that I and the people who are listening right now can apply to themselves going forward?
I think that what I've learned is that that people are able to adapt. I was surprised by how people implemented wearing masks, and not everybody, of course, but people started wearing masks. They started social distancing. They stayed home, this isn't the first time we've thought about this type of thing. Public health departments have been involved in exercises before related to pandemics, and we have plans in place for them. And these are conversations we have in public health. And never in my exercises or planning did I think that people would implement those things on such a wide scale. So I applaud everybody for doing that. What I would caution is that it's not time to let up, that we need to keep doing those things. Even though our numbers are dwindling right now, I have no doubt that we're at any moment a heartbeat away from the next outbreak at a healthcare facility or employer, and that we need to be prepared for for riding this roller coaster.
What do you think about masks? What I find interesting, and I note this in particular when I'm watching press conferences, that I've never seen a person to date in a state official in Illinois or the federal level who knew how to use a mask. Not one of them. Not one. And I know, see, the minute you left, I knew you knew. Because here, let's give an example. You're not supposed to touch it, for one thing. You're supposed to use the strings at the end. You're never supposed to touch the part that goes on your face. And you see people fold them into quarters and stuff them in their pockets. That's not how this works. It's not effective.
Well, I wouldn't say it's not effective. It's not the ideal way to use it, and it's certainly not the way that they show healthcare workers how to use one. But that, just because it's been touched, doesn't necessarily mean that it's not going to stop your respiratory droplets from going out beyond your face and coming into contact with somebody else. So it still does provide a level of protection.
Unless, of course, you've got it below your chin.
Yes, that does not help at all.
So which one have you seen that just personally just irked you when you saw somebody doing it?
There's countless examples.
Yeah.
But I think generally, if just the act of putting on the face mask, whether you're doing it wrong or not, it is offering some level of protection. I think it's unfortunate that it's become a political statement, and I wish that could be just kind of removed out of the whole conversation. But of course, it's there and not going away. But face masks do offer a level of protection. They keep your respiratory droplets close to your face, and they're protecting those around you.
So this is when it comes to you and what you're hoping to accomplish with your department. Listening to you talk about this, face masks is like priority one for you, then, right?
Really, social distancing is really priority number one. So keeping spacing between people. You know, there's all sorts of guidance depending on what type of facility as to how many people or what percentage of your capacity you might be allowed to have in there. And, you know, to me, it all comes down to spacing. If you can kind of maintain a bubble, so to speak, around yourself or around your immediate family from others, then that's really what's offering you the primary level of protection, and face masks would really come secondary to that.